Welcome to Product Mastery Now, where we simplify the seven knowledge areas for product mastery. These are the product management practices that elevate your influence and help you create products that your customers love. To see all seven and assess your strengths in product mastery, go to my website. That's productmasterynow.com. I'm Chad McAllister, a product management professor, practitioner, and your host. Today, we're talking about how product leaders can create more effective teams by using a people-first leadership approach. And joining us is Diana Sepner. She's head of product for education at the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. Her approach to product leadership empowers individuals, fosters collaboration, and connects with people in an authentic way. We've talked about this some in the past. I'm really looking forward to our conversation now and being able to share more of this with listeners. She's also a product leadership instructor on Maven and has held leadership and advisory product positions. You will also find a detailed written summary of everything we discuss, including a one-page action guide to help you put into action some of the key takeaways that Diana will share with us. Those resources are at productmasterynow.com/482. This podcast is made possible by the Rapid Product Mastery Experience. That's the RPM experience, which helps product VPs and leaders get their product managers and everyone else contributing to product to increase their performance. Participants build a foundation for higher performance by learning the seven essential product knowledge areas and building trust and collaboration in the process. It's not like other training. To see how it's unique and how it can help you, go to productmasterynow.com/RPM. Diana, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's exciting to talk to you. Appreciate it.
It's nice to talk once again. We have a few times in the past. And you talk about, I would say passionately talk about this people first product leadership approach. And it's very meaningful to you. And you have shared some good insights before. And I'm looking forward to going through those with you with the audience now too. But let's just kind of back up and have you describe, you know, when I say people first product leadership, what does that mean?
Yeah, so for me, it's about launching people. And to me, that's just as important as launching products. And that's because when people feel supported, their product efforts shine. And with those characteristics in mind, when I was, you know, talking to people and defining my leadership style, a colleague referred to me as a servant leader. And I put my team first, I created a safe space, and I ensured that they all had opportunities to shine. And I really appreciated the notion, but I didn't really like the phrase. I'm not an attendant to my team, I lead my team. And so instead, when I started to drill down around those characteristics, I wanted to acknowledge that I like and appreciate putting people first and foremost. And that's what I would expect, you know, for my team. That's how I would like to be treated. And thus that phrase, people first product leadership.
Okay. So it does have a strong servant leadership connection, right, in terms of what you're doing, but rephrasing it in terms of making clear it's the people first, and we're still leading and we're doing product leadership. So I like that, people first product leadership. Can you take us through, maybe we'll dive into the details in just a moment, but kind of take us through we're not seeing any visuals here, but I want to imagine in my mind, right, kind of this diagram of what are the key capabilities that leaders need if they're going to adopt a people-first approach.
Yeah, and so I'd break it down into a couple of different characteristics. And the first one is positive leadership character. And so that means, you know, an individual is showing traits such as integrity and responsibility, forgiveness, and compassion. And all of those come together to help, you know, an individual and consequently the team be better and to perform at a higher level. The next one that I would resurface is creating psychological safety. And I say resurface because I know from your podcast it's come up before. But it's extremely important. You want to establish an environment where team members can feel safe to take risks, to speak up, and to share their ideas, as well as questions, and to be honest, make mistakes. We're all human, we make mistakes. And so that psychological safety is extremely important too. And then wrapping it up nicely is promoting a learning culture. And so having that opportunity to continually learn, to continually improve as a team, and that enables individuals to adapt to changes, to, you know, strive for excellence. And that's really important in product management because things don't stay the same. We always have new technologies we work with. We always have new competitors that are coming into the space. And product management itself continues to evolve. And so that learning culture ensures that we're staying up to speed on not just, you know, product, but all the areas that impact our product, our customers, and cross-functional individuals that we work with.
Absolutely. And those change from time to time and we need to be learning. So we've got three big buckets or three big circles in my visual inside my brain of this. The positive leadership character, psychological safety, and promoting a learning culture. We'll see how far we get in talking through these, but can you break apart the positive leadership character first? And you gave us four characteristics there, four sub-characteristics, integrity, responsibility, forgiveness, and compassion. Tell us more and maybe you have some examples to connect with those.
Yeah, so with the first one, I would say it brings together the integrity, responsibility, and that's about developing people. Because you want to focus on the growth and the development of the individual, not just the product. And by helping people gain more skills, gain more confidence, gain more knowledge, then that helps the team work better together. And so that first facet underneath positive leadership character is developing people. The next then builds on that compassion and that forgiveness. You want to have individuals build their self-awareness as well as their emotional intelligence. And those two go very nicely hand in hand. And so you want to understand your own emotions, but also understand and appreciate the emotions of the individuals that you're working with. And so be able to do so by expressing empathy is really, really critical. And so there's exercises that, you know, I often do with teams. It's called an emotions wheel. And you start off by identifying how you're feeling. And that can surface inside characteristics that may not have been as visible if you just looked at someone or talked at someone. But the emotions wheel helps people to, you know, put a little sticky on where they're feeling and then be able to coach through that. And then the third aspect of the positive leadership character pulls it all together nicely is active listening. And so being able to, you know, develop a listening style that encourages people to be engaged, that creates an environment that's not competitive and builds on that emotional intelligence that we talked about a second ago, and does so in a way that shows that you're attentive, that you're comprehending, that you're internalizing what is being discussed, and then being able to use that insight to frame back and summarize and be able to move forward together in the same type of mindset.
Okay. So as a poor attempt of trying to model active listening, I did notice when you were talking about forgiveness and compassion, you did not use the word emotional intelligence as you just did, but you described things that sounded like that. So I was curious how you felt about emotional intelligence fitting into that. That this is the reflection of how you kind of are aware of your own emotions and how others perceive you as well, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think there's some words like emotional intelligence, even psychological safety, that individuals have a specific reaction to. And that may be incorporated into the culture. It may just be, you know, friends, people that they speak to. And so I do use other phrases just to help people understand that even though I'm not saying emotional intelligence, there are characteristics that make up emotional intelligence that may be more comfortable for an individual to focus on and to develop. And that way, even if someone doesn't like the phrase emotional intelligence, they appreciate and understand the characteristics and can work on developing those.
Right, right. Or they may have heard the phrase so much, not have a clear understanding of what the principles actually are. And we know it's important, but what is that thing, right? And having awareness of our own emotions and how we project those, having some control over how we act on those emotions and the like and how others see us, all important. I suspect we're going to psychological safety next. So I'll let you do that. But you said something about the emotional wheel that I want to tie into. But I want to see where we end up going first. So I'll get out of the way and let you do that.
Okay. So for psychological safety, again, you know, a phrase that, you know, I know you've talked about a lot with other individuals on the podcast, The one that really stood out to me was 474, you know, emotionally fit leadership for product managers with Dr. Emily Enhalt. And that, a lot of that came together for me in a similar vein to what I'm talking about, especially from the approach of psychological safety. And bringing psychological safety to the forefront builds on some of the characteristics that we just talked about. You know, you want to have empathy and understanding. You want to be able to feel that you can foster an environment where team members feel comfortable tackling the unknowns. And they know that they can do so in a way that encourages questions, that encourages open dialogue, and reinforces an individual to feel comfortable exploring an opportunity with their team. And that is really, really important. So I put that under the label of empathy and understanding, to be able to create that environment where people feel comfortable to tackle the unknowns. Building off of that, if you feel comfortable exploring, then the next step is experimentation. And so empowering, encouraging your team to be able to experiment, to try different ways to approach problems, to innovate, and to learn from the failures. And so experimentation is a powerful tool that can be realized and, you know, can grow beautifully if the environment is psychologically safe. And then you're going to be experimenting, you're going to make mistakes. And so that third facet of creating psychological safety is encouraging and sharing mistakes. You want to be able to build a culture where people feel comfortable openly discussing and learning from mistakes. And that reference out in the market that people may or may not know about is Google's Project Aristotle, where they were looking for what made successful teams at Google successful. And they found that there were a number of common characteristics. They knew what their goals were, they knew their roles. But the thing that really stood out and differentiated those successful teams is psychological safety. They were sharing mistakes. And because those mistakes were shared, they weren't repeated because people knew about them. The other teams, even though they were successful, didn't share their mistakes. So they were repeating the same mistakes again and again. And so that final pillar that I would put under creating psychological safety is encouraging and sharing mistakes.
Excellent. Yeah. The thing that you said before that I'll get back to tie into that. So with my university professor hat on, whenever I start lectures for students, I engage in a psychological safety exercise with them usually, is a simple check-in question. And this came about, it's out of Project Aristotle, but I was in a team once where the team leader did this, and I'm wired as an engineer, and I like to, you know, get to solving problems. And the question was something very lightweight, like, you know, what are you looking forward to this weekend? What was something exciting from last weekend? You know, something like that. And I felt like spending 10 to 15 minutes out of an hour meeting was a huge waste of time. But it's not my meeting, so, you know, I went along with it. And interestingly enough, I found after really just 2, maybe 3 weeks of doing these weekly meetings, we interacted differently outside the meeting, and the work became a little bit more enjoyable, and because we were getting to know people kind of in a different way. And so I've adopted this, and I model when I'm teaching innovation courses, as a tool for them to take away. And we always start each lecture simply going around the, you know, physical classroom or virtual classroom, asking a question related to something, right? My first question is usually pretty easy, like, what's a strength that you have that, you know, either you recognize or others say about you, right? Something like that. And they might tie into innovation over the time, but it's really to get us to know each other. And you mentioned that this emotional wheel you have, and you said, you know, like just asking, how are you feeling? One of my students once, when I asked, you know, how do you guys feel about this check-in question thing I'm doing? And one of the students said, we've adopted that actually. And we asked one day, you know, how are you feeling? And one guy was having some serious issues going on and shared that and said, that was the rest of the meeting, right? We chose as a team to focus on what that team member was dealing with. And it strengthened everyone and the team, you know, how the team worked together by taking, you know, time to do that. So I want to revisit that with you a little bit, because that emotional wheel thing, you know, kind of a capability of good leadership you shared and psychological safety fit together. Can you talk about what you've seen about kind of combining those ideas?
Yeah, it's an exercise that I do at the start of my People First Product Leadership course on Maven, and it's a really great icebreaker. Because at the start of any new activity, some people are nervous, some people are excited, some people are, you know, thinking about other things. And so by having people put just a little dot on the emotions wheel about where they're feeling, it helps everybody get a grounding on, you know, are there individuals that, you know, at least me as a teacher, as well as others in the course, may want to reach out to more and help their unease. Are there individuals who are excited? And that gives a great indication of maybe you can call on them for an exercise. And so it helps to set the stage around how to incorporate individuals at the start of a session where a lot of the people don't know each other. And so I find it really effective to start that way. And then at the end of the day, you go back and say, how do you feel now? Mm. And that really helps then to see those changes and to help acknowledge, you know, new things can be scary, and that's totally fine. And look at what we learned throughout the day, look at the friends you made, and see how that's affected your emotions as a result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I assume the emotional wheel has the emotions on it to help us, yep. You know, because I'm the, you know, typical male that if you ask me earlier in my life, I still struggle with this, but if you ask me earlier in my life, you know, there's maybe 3-4 emotions I can identify, right? And having a list actually is a helpful tool to think about, oh, I'm not really angry, I'm frustrated because of this thing, right?
And it's very colorful, and it's got your like inner characteristics, and then it pulls out from there. The other exercise that I've done with teams is to build, people will call it a personal OS, I call it a README. And so it's a document where you outline, you know, how you work most effectively. What are things, like you said, that people may not know about you that really are insightful? And so you create this, you know, this README, this working manual to help others know how to work with you. And that also is a really good way to break the ice. It's a great reference point for individuals. If you're going to interact with someone for the first time, you can reference it. If you haven't talked to someone a bit, you can call upon it. If you have new team members who are onboarding, you can go back and share those READMEs for the other individuals. And that new person can get a sense of all the different people that they're about to work with more as they join the team.
Yeah, it sounds like a great tool. And I would think a lot of really good self-reflection, too, just in doing it for yourself, right, before you give it to others. And think through how do you like to be communicated with, and what do you expect, and what does accountability mean, and very good. Okay. So we got these leadership characteristics. We have psychological safety, and you said promoting a learning culture.
Yep. And so that's the third one. And that's focused on continuous learning and improvement within the team. And so it includes things like embracing new knowledge and adapting behavior based on new insights. And all that's essential given how fast the world evolves around us. And especially in product management, where we're always facing new changes and challenges, you know, just in our day-to-day environments. And so from that learning culture, there's a main characteristic that I pull out, and that's empowerment through experimentation. And so you want to encourage experimentation, and you want to do so in a way that's systematic. You want to know the hypothesis. You want to know why you're experimenting, and to be able to ensure that you have a desired outcome in mind. And are you hitting that outcome as you're experimenting? And as you proceed, you're going to have some successes, some failures, and to ensure that you continue to share those so the rest of the team learns as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and building that culture where we, you know, fundamentally as product people, we're doing something new, right? We're either taking an existing product and making it better in some way, improving it, or we're creating something, a new product that did exist before. Yep. And that means we need to have this culture where it's okay to make mistakes because we're doing something new. So creating that empowerment through experimentation is very important. When you're helping people to get comfortable with that, to use this if it's somehow new to them or get everyone on the same page, do you have an exercise you take them through?
I don't have an exercise per se, but I do introduce the concept using myself and just letting people know that I'm going to make mistakes. And it's often unexpected that someone who is, you know, a product leader or leading a team will admit that it's likely I'm going to make mistakes. And that's why I think a team is stronger when they feel comfortable sharing that knowledge that we're human, we're all going to make mistakes. And if they hear that from the leader and they see that in practice, then that helps them feel more comfortable that they can make mistakes too. And so it's something that I will admit right at the start, and it's something that I will acknowledge. I mean, I'll give my advice and guidance, and others will have different opinions, and I characterize all of that as more insight comes from the contributions of multiple people versus just one person. And so as we're all learning from each other and revising our thinking, I create a space where that can happen, as opposed to just saying, this is my way, this is the way we will go. I let people know that I'm going to make mistakes. And so if we can work together, that's going to make all of us be able to achieve more of our goals.
Yeah. Leaders naturally model what's expected. And as though, as followers, we look for that as well, right? And we do what the leader's doing. And that is a very wise thing to do from the beginning, putting a new team together, working with a group, just making that clear. I'm going to make mistakes kind of says, I expect that you might make some mistakes too, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's especially important, you know, in product management, because thinking about everything that's happening now around, you know, AI and ChatGPT, and it's new. And so we're all learning how to incorporate, you know, AI into our products, and there are going to be missteps, and being aware that we can help each other advance faster when we share that knowledge of what we learned, what worked, what didn't work. If we share that within the group, within the company, that helps everyone be able to evolve, and not just to share the wins, but to share the mistakes, or how, if you want to term them, learnings, all that makes everyone go faster. And ideally the customer benefits as a result too.
Absolutely, right? And this is why we're doing this. We're hopefully creating a more enjoyable, more productive work environment, a place where we want to be and contribute. But also we're doing it for the reason of trying to add value to our customer and create products that we're proud of, that we're happy to be, you know, associating our time and efforts with as well.
Exactly. Very well said.
Okay. So a lot of our listeners are product leaders, and this, what you've talked through, will be very helpful for them to kind of reflect, you know, where are they now in terms of their characteristics and making use of psychological safety and using experiments and fostering this continuing learning environment. We certainly have some product managers that will be leaders, and they're listening to this too and thinking, okay, how can I model that? I also want to ask you, what about the product manager who's listening that says, man, my leader is so far away from this right now, and what you're saying sounds great. I would love to find a leader like that. Besides them going to find another job, anything to share to kind of, you know, help create, what can the product manager do to help start creating a climate in the team that embraces some of these things?
Yeah, and that's where I would recommend a product community of practice. And it may be 2 product managers getting together. It may be 20 product managers getting together. But you can start a change just by one person taking that initiative, reaching out to someone else who has, you know, a similar mindset or a similar approach that wants to, you know, promote learning, create psychological safety. So when you have that other individual, you then start to build that community. So it starts with one person. And once you've got that one person, then you can each reach out to another person. And you can see that just naturally grow. The research I was reading about communities of practice, you need about 33% of the desired people to be involved. And depending on the size of your company, that can be a really small number. And that means that you can, you know, reach out to 1 or 2 people who have a similar desire to learn, to have that psychologically safe culture. And you can start to come together to identify ways that you can influence each other and have that then permeate out to the individuals that you work with cross-functionally. And so with product managers, we're always part of a team. And so if you can mirror the type of characteristics that you want to have reflected back on you, if you can do that within your Scrum team, within the team that you're working on, that will then permeate out to others because they will feel supported, they will feel encouraged, And that's then a characteristic that they can carry on to their teams. And you begin to notice those people who are champions of the way that you're, you know, conducting your meetings, or the ways that you're doing user research, and the way that you're encouraging everyone to have a contribution. And you can identify those individuals who then could be part of your community of practice, and it'll grow instinctively.
Very good. Yeah, you start making a snowball. And yeah. That community of practice is a good place to build the knowledge and confidence in trying some of these, and then bringing it back to their teams as well. Okay, yep. Excellent. Really good information. Thank you for sharing kind of, you know, those three spheres, buckets, however I'm visually thinking about right now, and everyone else, for people first leadership. As listeners know, we always like a good innovation quote as well. And I was wondering what you brought us and what that means to you.
Yeah, so my quote is from U.S. Ventures, and the person is Jared Hecht. And he shared, when there are no politics or people vying for a bigger slice of a pie, magic happens. When things are done collaboratively and equally, everyone roots for each other, and the only winner is the team. And that quote just resonated with me. So I've been carrying it around and just, you know, reflecting on it, because I think it's really powerful, you know, for so many different sectors, and to see it coming from someone in venture and having it be so applicable to product management. I just thought that was a nice synergy.
Yeah. I think a lot of us have figured out, maybe not in my case, it wasn't initially, because I happened to be in a really good team and didn't recognize it at the time, that over time, the people we work with, it becomes more important than the actual work. And yeah, it makes a difference who we're working with and what we're accomplishing together.
Yeah, totally agree.
Thank you for the insights very much. How can people find out about what you're doing? We mentioned the course you have on Maven. Anything else you want to share about getting some details from you on these things?
Yeah, and so other places you can find me, I'm at dianastepner.substack.com. So I have a newsletter. I'm also just at dianastepner.com, and you can always find me on LinkedIn as well.
Excellent. We will put those links in the show notes to make it easy for people to get to. And thank you so much for sharing this information. We're talking because I had invited you to do a masterclass with a group of product leaders, and appreciate you sharing the information now with this audience as well. And if people want to find out more about some of the tools, they can certainly reach out to you directly and get that information from you. So thanks, Diana.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm excited to have this be aired and to continue our discussion.
It would be wonderful. And once again, listeners, you'll find the written details of everything we discussed, including that one-page action guide to help you put into action those three categories of areas that Diana just shared with us, at productmasterynow.com/482. Everyone, keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Mastery Now, where product leaders and managers gain product mastery through practical knowledge, influence, and confidence. By listening, you are becoming a product master, creating products customers love. Find additional resources at productmasterynow.com. Keep innovating.